at your service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now the host of the show, Rich Orris.
Windows during the cold weather. Maybe your kitchen is finally ready for an update. We've done a lot in the kitchen for New Year's, for Christmas, for Thanksgiving, a lot of gatherings. So a lot of information from that you could be taking stock in and figuring out how to improve what you have. Or maybe you're just building a wish list for spring projects, whatever is on your mind. We can talk through it today and help you start the new year off on the right foot. So grab a cup of coffee, take a look around with some fresh new year eyes, and let's get it. Let's see what we can do. The Home Improvement Show today. The phone lines are wide open, 314-436-7900. You can jump in, and, you know, it's a great thing coming into the new year. Hopefully, a lot of people have been thinking about their St. Louis homes and what happens around here, and maybe making some New Year's resolutions for your homes. All your resolutions don't have to be about weight loss or quitting coffee or soda or losing weight, stuff like that. It doesn't have to be that way. Sometimes your smartest resolutions is taking better care of your biggest investment around your home. And I tell you, one that would be important to think about is very easy to do is think about this for a minute. Do you know where all your shutoffs are? This could be a great first step. Learn around the house, gas, water, electric. How do you shut all that off and where do you shut all that off? At Mosby Building Arts, we like to locate all those shutoffs, all of those systems before we start working on a home. And any really good experienced workers will want to do the same thing. You want to kind of know where all that is for you. And I could tell you, as coming out of the field, working in the field, and having accidents and different things happen while working, it's imperative that we know where all those shutoffs are in the event of some sort of emergency accident. And you can do the same thing. It'd be an easy first step for this New Year's for you. But hey, we're going to jump into our first quick break here. But remember, we'll have more home improvement and your calls, questions, concern, whatever you got, or you could text 314-436-7900. More home improvement right after this.
It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. Once again, Rich Orris.
More home improvement for you. We've got what you need. 314-436-7900. You can text in a question. You can call in, get on the air, and let's talk out what you're doing, what you're thinking. And really, when you think about calling in and being curious about something with your house, think of me kind of like your parent. As parents, we know so much about the kids and what the kids are going to do and what the kids are thinking and what might happen next, because we've been there and we lived through it and we've made all those poor choices and some of those bad decisions early on. So we can kind of then go, well, maybe this is a better route. And I will never forget a few times that my son had come to me and at certain stages in his life and you know, said, well, I want to talk about something. And, you know, right before he was getting ready to start college, he came and said, I had something I wanted to discuss with you. And I looked at him and I said, let me guess, you're thinking about not starting college in the fall and taking a year off to work and earn some money and see what you want to do and then maybe start next year. And then he was like, wow, how in the world? Well, because I'd been there, I'd done that. Did the same thing shortly into his first year of college, and it was the same thing. I kind of said, well, let me get out of my work clothes. I'll come back in. Let's have a chat. Let me think about it. I walked back in. I said, let me guess, you're changing your major. And he's like, oh, my gosh. Well, because I'd been through all that. So in the home improvement, working, helping clients, selling projects, performing these projects, seeing so much happening is the same thing. Been there, done that. Consider me the parent that's done everything wrong once and learned from that, and then said, hey, let me spread a little bit of this knowledge, because it's not great when you do that. And I can tell you a few, like I was just kind of talking about maybe a good resolution is to understand your house and learn where your shutoffs are, how to shut them off, what you should do in the event of an accident or emergency or something started really happening or going wrong. And let's say you're the only one home and a toilet just busts and it's spraying water everywhere, the hose to the washing machine, something is just spraying everywhere. Do you know how to stop that? Do you know where to shut that off or the whole house off? I was just in a house with two fireplaces. We were looking around and the gas lines to them, and they were put in years ago. They were upgraded years ago, and they don't have the key right in front of the fireplace in the hearth or on the wall where you can easily shut that gas off. And they do that for a good reason. And these get into our inspections and our codes. And so we were kind of telling the homeowner, like, woof, they may make us do something with this. Because if we're affecting the gas line, they may say, you need to do this. And I've had several times working in the field when things do happen. I was remodeling a bathroom years ago, and I'm doing some framing, and all the plumbing lines were run and capped off and everything. And I'm on a little step stool working on some framing, and I went to step back and kind of trip, lost my balance, and when I stepped, kind of fell backwards, I put my foot right on the pipe for the toilet sticking out of the wall. Now, it's a rough end, so there's no kind of shutoffs or nothing. It's just a pipe sticking out. We haven't even drywalled yet. Bent that over, broke it, and boy, here I go from the second floor to the basement, about 1,000 miles an hour down the stairs. Shut that water off to the whole house right away, because there's nowhere else to get to something. But knowing where that was and before starting that project and going, okay, let me find where all this stuff is, I knew exactly where to go. And there truly wasn't even any damage, even though it was a full-on half-inch line just spraying right across the house. I got it off so quickly. So think about the same thing for you and your house. And do you know? And what if something were to happen? And that's why a lot of times when we do this, if there's a couple people, you're testing out the plumbing lines, you put someone downstairs, they got their phone. Years and years ago, we would use radios walkie-talkie types to have someone down by the shutoff. They turn the water on. Somebody's watching everything. So if something goes wrong, you can get that shut back off right away for you. So, but yeah, we got a caller here. Let's jump on the line and see what's going on. We got just a little bit of time before our break, but let's see if we can get this question in. Hey, Kim, how you doing? What's happening?
Oh, good. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I may need to hear this and then do a little more answering in the next segment, in the next hour. But go ahead with your question. Let's see what we can get in. We got about a minute.
Okay. I have a concrete basement, and I don't want any carpet or vinyl or anything like that. I just would like it painted. So I would like your suggestions on the way to do it. I don't want to, like, grind it down or anything like that. So would using a bonding primer on, like, concrete paint, like for porches, would that be a good option?
Okay. So you've thought about, like, a professional to come in and kind of sand it all down and just put a – they can finish that really nice just with the sanding and all of that. So you don't want to kind of go quite to that expense, correct?
Right, yes. No, because I don't want to have all that dust and everything like that. I just like to paint it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the key to that's going to be cleaning it. So I'll get into this more heavy in the next segment, in the next hour. If you want to hold through the long break to hear some of it or ask any questions, you can. But we're going to get into our news break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, thank you.
At your service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now the host of the show, Rich Orris.
Okay, welcome into hour two of the Home Improvement Show. Here we go. We've got 97.1 FM joining with us. So plenty of people out there, probably plenty of jobs, projects, questions going on today. So again, feel free to give me a call, whatever you got, whatever you need, 314-436-7900. And let's, I'm going to go back to Kim. She was good enough to hold the line here through the break. Kim, are you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, so your question definitely has a lot of steps to go through this. And the first step, the first thing you want to do is decide if painting is the best idea on your basement floor. And the risk is really moisture. You got to try and find out if you have any moisture that's coming through that floor. So what I would recommend is taking two or three areas, if you can, kind of clean them up a little bit, let them sit after cleaning for a couple days. Take a piece of clear plastic, like 2 foot by 2 foot, maybe do two or three different spots in different areas of the basement, and tape those down to the concrete floor in those areas where you kind of clean things up, and leave them there for a day or two. Come back after 24 hours, maybe again after 48 hours, and see if you see any moisture in between the concrete and that sheet of plastic in any of those areas. Because if you do, there's water that gets to a basement, and then there's moisture that permeates through concrete. And a lot of basements have not the water, but the moisture. And it's just kind of coming up from the ground through it. And if that's happening, then the paint job's not probably going to be your best solution, because it will always try and eat away at that paint. It'll separate it, make it bubble, flake, and come up as that moisture is trying to fight its way through the concrete. So if you have a lot of moisture and you see a lot of it on that plastic, you might want to consider actually doing the professional polishing of the floor, where they come in and they kind of They basically sand it with a bunch, kind of like they do a hardwood floor, with a bunch of different types of sandpaper, getting finer and finer until they really put like a polished finish on that concrete. And that can breathe, and that can let that moisture vapor come through the floor and come out into the air. If you do not get a lot of moisture, and then you're good to say, yep, let's go ahead and paint, because then you got to kind of pick next, how durable do you want this floor to be, to pick the type of paint that you want to put down. So there's kind of three kinds. There's like a two-part epoxy for concrete, and that's the same kind of system that they put in on garage floors, so it's durable enough where you're parking cars, driving cars, and so it's very durable. There's a one-part epoxy that's kind of in the middle, and then there's your typical concrete paint that is you're going to want to put a primer down first and then just do a concrete floor paint. That's going to be your lightest duty. So if you're using the basement for storage and maybe just laundry, going down there a couple times a week doing laundry or whatever, that's the lightest duty. You'll probably be good with just a concrete paint. If you're going to try and finish it off and keep the concrete floor, you're going to have kids playing and all kinds of action down there, you might want to get more durable in that choosing of which kind of paint to go with.
Okay.
And there are kits that you can do it all yourself. It's still a good DIY project. But now once you've figured out what product you want to use and that painting is going to be okay, the next thing is, it's a very intense cleaning to get these products to stick well to that concrete. So you want to sweep, vacuum, you want to scrub, use degreaser, get any oils or any kind of stains up. If there's any kind of drywall mud, any kind of residue that you see on spots, you have to try and clean that up and get that out, and then kind of rinse everything off. Once it's completely clean, you need to kind of etch it. And that's where you can get into sanding is a good way to etch, but you're going to get kind of that dust and cleaning again. Or you could use like an acid to clean the floor again with muriatic or citric acid to kind of etch that concrete, let that dry really good for 24 to 48 hours. You kind of clean that up, and then you can go in and do your actual painting with the primer and the floor paint, the one part epoxy or the two part epoxy. So it's
okay.
And people they question a lot. I get the question a lot on the cost of doing this professionally, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of steps. Labor's expensive. And that's what makes this such a good DIY project, because you can buy those kits and you can do it for hundreds instead of thousands and still get it well and correct and get it to last. So I know I threw a lot at you, but that's kind of the things you want to look at and think about before getting this put in.
Okay. Would like Dawn soap, would that be like a good degreaser or something else?
I would look for, something in the store other than Dawn, in like a big box store, Lowe's, something like that, a degreaser cleaner, because you definitely want it diluted a lot. So I don't know like the actual solution for Dawn to water, that sort of thing. But if you actually buy a degreaser, it'll be in the bottle ready to go and work with it. Or it'll come with instructions for cleaning where it tells you put so much into like 1 gallon or something like that. So it'll guide you better, because you really want to make sure this is gonna work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. Well, thank you. you very much.
You are very, very welcome. You are very welcome. And we're going to get into our next break. We're just about time for this here. So, Joni, if you could hold the line one more time, and everybody else, we've got some coming in. And if you've got anything, don't forget, we're here. 314-436-7900. Got plenty to come after the break. We'll have more home improvement for you right after this.
You're listening to The Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Mosby Building Arts. Once again, Rich Orris.
For you, 314-436-7900 finds me right here today. Don't forget, you can text in a question too, and we can try and get to your questions that way as well. But for now, we got Joni on the line. Joni, are you there?
I'm here.
Awesome. Thanks for holding for so long. What do you got going on?
So I have a 122-year-old house. It is a full three stories in that the attic is a full story with a landed staircase, but all unfinished. I have a 75-year-old oil-fired boiler for my hot water radiators. Obviously, I have plaster walls. I want to install new CO2 and smoke detectors. And I live in Scott Mosby's old neighborhood across the street from his old house in Glendale. And according to whatever rules and regulations would be effective in that area, where and what can I put in the easiest and the best as far as the smoke and the CO2s?
Okay, yeah. So that house is definitely very difficult, and we run into this a lot, and they've changed the codes a little bit, or I guess got more lenient on. They still want them in the same places, and they want them to speak to one another, but they've developed some smoke detectors that will work with a really good long, like, lithium battery in it. And it will use a radio frequency to communicate with all the other smoke detectors in the house. And they make them where they're a combination smoke detector and carbon monoxide detector at the same time. So what that system kind of entails is, in the basement, in the unfinished part of the basement, where the panel box is, you run a dedicated circuit from the panel box to the first smoke detector. So that one absolutely always has power to it. And then you use a radio frequency type of smoke detector that will talk to other smoke detectors in the house. And so where they will require you to put these smoke detectors, kind of starting in the basement, there has to be a smoke detector with a carbon monoxide detection combo in the unfinished part of the basement. If there's any finished area, you need one in a regular smoke detector in any finished area. And then sometimes if there's different unfinished areas, like, for example, you have a furnace room, it's all unfinished with some storage. You've got a finished area, and then on the other side of the basement, you have another unfinished storage room. A lot of times they'll want you to put a regular smoke detector in that unfinished storage room. Also,
you know, mine's all unfinished, and the boiler is right next to the gas water heater.
Okay. So just one in the basement, hardwired. And then that is the one that kind of has a transmitter that speaks to everything. And then on the main floor, you will need a smoke detector and a carbon monoxide combo detector on the main floor. And then from there above, you will need a regular smoke detector in each bedroom of the entire house. So whether it's 2, 3, 4, 5 bedrooms, you want one in each bedroom. And then outside of the bedrooms in the hallway, you need one within 10 feet of the bedroom door, of all the bedroom doors. So if you have a 20-foot hallway and you got 4 bedrooms, you'll probably need 2 smoke detectors in that hallway to be close enough to reach all of the doors if it's more than 20 feet, if it's 21, 22, something like that. So you could need a couple of them in the hallway. One of them in the main area hallway of even the second floor is another smoke and carbon monoxide detector. So there's one smoke and carbon monoxide detector combo on each floor of the house. And then there's one in every finished area, one in each bedroom, and then one within 10 feet of the bedroom doors out into the hallway. So sometimes big houses, especially the old ones, they take a lot of smoke detectors to get up to code. But it's a great safety thing. It's very important.
And should I have one in the attic?
So in the attic area, I mean, you could put one up there. The thing I would worry about there is how, if it's not finished at all, and if it's meant to kind of be a finished area, or it's a full where it's, the only thing I'd worry about the attic is I might not recommend putting one up there because of the different moisture and the heat. If it gets really hot up there in the summer, you might have that thing getting dirty, getting dusty, and going off. So if you did put one in the attic, I would say you might have issues. You could always get rid of it, but it might just be where instead of changing it every 10, 12 years, change the one in the attic for a whole new one more often, because it's just going to take a lot of abuse, heat, and all of that, and dust and dirt, and dust and dirt will set them off sometimes.
Okay. All right.
All righty.
And that one could also be one even that wasn't RF, so that it might not set off as much, or I guess you'd still want it RF.
Well, you'd still want it because if something, if something were to happen, it alerts every smoke detector in the house.
Right.
And that's one of the safety issues is you've got one going off in the basement or the second floor, and someone's in the basement and they just don't hear it. And it's limiting their time to get out of the house.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, perfect.
All righty.
Thank you so much for clearing that up for me.
Yeah, no problem. You are very, very welcome. And so let's jump over to Jane and see what's going on with Jane. Jane, are you there? How you doing?
I am. Thank you very much. How are you doing?
I'm good. Happy New Year. Thanks for calling. What do you got going on?
I'm going to pick your brain about this ghost up on my roof.
Okay. What's the ghost on the roof?
This is the third roof replacement on this house because of weather, et cetera. And I've never had this knocking before up on the roof until this new roof. And it was done about 2 years ago. And when it was done, then the knocking started. So I had a man come out from the company, and he went up into the attic, and he said, "I don't see anything here that would cause a problem." Then he went up on the roof, and he said, "I don't see anything up there that would be causing that problem. Give it about 2 years, and we'll see if you still have the problem." So it's knocking. It's knocking around. Oh, when someone takes a shower, it really is musical. Lots of knocking.
Really?
And sometimes it'll be over the bathrooms. Sometimes, this is a ranch house, it'll be on the opposite side of the house, and I can hear the knocking there, and also by the fireplace.
Okay.
But it knocks every day. It knocks in the cold. It knocks in the hot weather.
So you've basically heard this every day?
Every day.
Pretty much?
Yeah, every day. So it drives you nuts after a while. What could be causing it?
Yeah, that to happen that often is a little bit of a mystery, because usually this is caused with the wood kind of moving, expanding, contracting. So it happens with temperature changes, drastic temperature changes, but generally it's not something, you know, you hear it more when it's super hot, or you hear it more when it gets really cold in the coldest time of winter, you know, and in between, but it's
about the same amount of volume of knocking and tapping, cold weather, hot weather, raining.
Yeah, that is super interesting. And boy, the only thing I could really suggest is trying to be up in the attic enough to hear it and find it and see, because moisture will do it too. When it dries and when it swells, it's because of the humidity, the moisture, or the lack of the humidity and the moisture. So above the shower was kind of like, maybe think, well, yeah, if you're taking a hot shower and you got a fan going and it's dumping into the attic, that could play some part in it.
Okay.
But I do not have any reason to believe that the roofers did much of anything different. Because you could even install, I mean, roofing shingles, not in the greatest manner, but typically you're nailing them to the plywood, and all roofs do that. So I really don't think there's anything that the roofers did
that
would necessarily cause it. Yeah. I think it's just something of the house. How old's the house?
It was built in 2005.
Yeah, so you're at that age where the kind of newer home, the knocking and things, all that nature happens a lot more in homes from like the 90s, 2000, newer wood, 2010, and the newer trusses and the way things, you know, the wood's grown fast. It definitely happens more in those houses because of the woods. So, yeah, I think you got to trial and error, kind of sit it out, wait and see if you want to pay somebody to try and be in your attic long enough to try and pinpoint if it's coming from a particular area. Cause sometimes just putting your hand on it, you can feel it or whatever. You can get closer. It's kind of like we were just talking about smoke detectors. When one starts beeping and you're walking around a house trying to figure out which one's beeping, I feel like that's what you're going to be doing inside your attic.
Oh, wow. And then what's the fix if they do find something that they consider?
Well, that's a good question, because there's really not any true fix, as far as I would just try to add some kind of maybe sister on some more 2x4s, see if there's adding some different lumber to it that can minimize the movement, securing it in some way. A lot of times it's like where the truss is hitting the top plate, so trying to secure that a little better. It's a trial and error, secure stuff and see if it will even help.
Wow, that sounds very complicated.
It's a lot of time.
Since, you know, the swelling of the wood and that sort of thing. So I'll send my partner up there for about a week and have him listen.
Put a stiff board and a mattress and you hang out up there for a while. Hey, I appreciate the call. Interesting situation. I wish you good luck with that. We got to get into our middle hour break here. But hey, David, if you hang on real quick through the break, we will get to you as soon as we return. And anybody else needs to come in, 314-436-7900. Thanks, Jane.
The Voice of St. Louis, News Radio 1120, KMOX.
All right, we are back. plenty of time for everybody. If you've got something for me, feel free to call in 314-436-7900. Sue, if you're still out there, you can call back, get in. But for now, let's go straight to David and see what is happening with David. How you doing, David?
Hey, well, not too bad, Rich. I'm wondering if she could probably make some extra money on Halloween selling it as, selling tickets to the haunted house.
And, yeah.
She could live the rest of her life in these, in luxury at some penthouse hotel. You know, I'm wondering about house paint that gets exposed to sulfur dioxide. Down in Trenton, Kentucky, there was just a railroad accident down there, and it released a whole bunch of poison gas, and it was sulfur dioxide gas, and it went multiple counties. So I'm just wondering about house paint and probably even sulfur dioxide, if that'll eat up your roof. And so I'm wondering, is there, it happened just before Christmas, so it's over a week ago. And I'm just wondering, is there something that people down there can do to, not just hose down the place, but what can you do to make sure that your paint is protected? And does that etch glass? What sort of things does sulfur dioxide do?
Boy, that is a really good question, because I don't know too much as far as what that does getting on the surface of painted houses, painted siding, all of that. I know when repainting and all of that, you really need to clean up and make sure there's nothing on the surface, even just dust, makes layers of paint not stick. So I would imagine even if there's not something that happens greatly to the actual paint job, it might be the next paint job. And I don't have a great solution other than power washing, normal stuff that we do to get this work done and get houses painted. I'd have to do some research on the sulfur dioxide and see like how you even clean it up for your next paint job and what does it do to the surfaces, because I am just not positive on that one whatsoever.
Yeah, it's looking at this news article about it says that it was molten sulfur and sulfur dioxide. And what bugs me about this is they weren't double-walled tank cars. And if you remember a couple of years, we're coming on the third anniversary of the East Palestine train derailment that dumped poison gas for 40 miles.
Oh, my, yeah.
Rich counties, poor counties, everybody got this poison gas. And hundreds of millions of dollars worth of settlements on that. And both sides of the aisle, the Republicans and Democrats, swore they were going to force the trains to have double-walled tank cars, and they haven't done it.
Yeah.
And the thing that's bugging me the most is Congressman Graves up in northern Missouri he's the head of the Transportation Committee. He swore he was going to get it done, and he still hasn't done it 3 years later. So
there's a lot with the government as far as with the EPA and just with the lead paint that we have to deal with. And sometimes the regulations they come up with just aren't always as great or as important, and they do all this and it costs us money, and sometimes it's just not even as necessary as they probably think with the issues that are out there. And yeah, I wish them all luck in trying to get anybody to do what they're going to say and help all us homeowners out there around from having these things happen to us. So, hey, I appreciate the call there, David. And we're going to jump over to Randy real quick and see what's going on there. Randy, I got about 1 minute, and then I can start to answer maybe in the next segment for you. What's going on?
Okay. Well, I found out I'm supposed to have 40 pounds of water pressure coming into the house, and I don't know if that's happening or not, and I don't know what I need to do to or what needs to be done in order to get the proper pressure coming in. And the second thing is that sink, I had a faucet put on, and over time it's gotten to the point where it just comes out very slowly, although the sprayer lets a lot more water run through it when I turn on the water. And I think they put a restrictor in there. Uh-huh. And if it's got lime in it, I don't know if I have what I'd have to do to either replace the faucet or put something in there to get the lime out.
All right. Well, hey, Randy, I appreciate the question. If you want to hold the line, I'll start answering this in the next segment. I got a hard break we need to get to, but I will get back to this in just a minute. Everybody else, 436-7900 finds me.
You're listening to The Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on 97.1 FM Talk. Now, once again, here's Rich Orris.
All right. Welcome back. Welcome back. Home Improvement here for you. We've got a couple things going on here. So we've got Randy on the line, was asking before the break about water pressure, whether it's at 40 pounds or above, and then a faucet that's starting to work slowly. Randy, you still there? You there, Randy?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great, great. So the water pressure in your home, the first thing that you would want to do is test it to see what it is. And you can buy an actual, just like a tire pressure gauge, it's a water pressure gauge. It screws on to like a hose nozzle. So you can put it on a hose bib inside the house. A lot of times there's a hose bib right there by the main shutoff. That's the best place to do it because that'll be what's coming in directly right there if you have that. And so test that pressure and see what you're running at. 50 to 60 pounds of pressure is ideal. You don't want to really get much above that, and you definitely 40 or below is like really getting pretty low. And so test that, see where you're at, and then if you need to change it, if you have a water pressure regulator inside the house, just inside that main shutoff, you can either replace that or adjust that. If there's so much lime and it's so old, it's going to be hard to get that water pressure regulator to adjust and actually work. My house was built in 2002 or 2003, something like that. And I had my pressure regulator valve replaced in the past 5 years. I don't remember exactly when. Boy, time really flies. But so 20 years or so, you might get enough just lime buildup that needs to be replaced. If you don't have a pressure regulator, then you need to consider how you correct that pressure. Being if you have too much pressure, you get a pressure regulator so you can turn that pressure down. If you have too little, it means you don't have enough pressure coming in from the city, from the actual public water. If their water pressure is under 40 and you don't have a pressure regulator and you're under 40, then you want to get an actual system that will boost the pressure. You can get that, they'll make water pressure boosters that will take that and boost the pressure in the house to get it to where you want. And generally that would, you can adjust that to put it where you want it and get the house working regularly. Looking at your faucet, if you have lime coming into that faucet and you have all the corrosion getting into that faucet, the first place you usually check is right on the end of that faucet. Where they do put that kind of regulator that screen. Yep. You got to get to that screen and either clean that out or replace that screen. And that should take care of that faucet as well.
Oh, that makes it very easy. Now, as far as the location, I've got two. I've got outside lines. One goes to a hose in the backyard, and one on the side of the house. And you, I know where they turn that off and on. And then there's one that comes into the house. It goes into the washer. So the main valve that I would find, would it be located there, the one that comes into the house by the washer, or would it be near a water?
It would be wherever
water heater.
Yeah, it would be. It should be near there. It would be wherever the water from the city actually enters the house. And where the main shutoff for the whole house is, usually everything's just beyond that, kind of going.
Yeah, I got one. I got one under the sink, and okay, I'll have to look for that. So I wouldn't be talking to the city about the water pressure if it were too low. Then,
I mean, you could try, but I just the city water pressure is definitely hard to deal with because. It changes because it can be higher in one area and then lower in another area. And if you're high up on a hill, it's going to be a little bit lower for you. And if you're running down or close to where it starts, it's going to be a little higher for you. So,
yeah. So if I could get a plumber then, and they might be able to deal with this also.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely recommend. You can try to start out just buying a tester and seeing where your pressure is, and then you can kind of decide, yeah, if it's that far off, maybe I bring in a professional or not. Yeah. So, all right.
I was having a trouble with the sink recently, and I hooked up the garden hose and ran the hose into the house and hooked it up into the bathroom sink, and I ran it through the sink, and I didn't realize it was clogged. It was backing up, and it actually flushed it out.
Yep, that will
and
that
cleaned everything up. And I hooked up the plumbing right so that it wouldn't back up and leak. And so I was lucky that way.
Yep, I can tell you, I did something similar years back in a house in North County I had where it had a lot of lime. Always happening. About once a year, my kitchen would just slow down and fill up. And I created my own kind of little hose that I would hook to the supply line on the hot side. I'd disconnect supply line, hook this up to the supply line, and run the cold water backwards and unhook it at the hot water heater and flush all that out. And once a year, I would flush that out, flush the water heater out, and then everything would work for a year. And that cost a lot less money than actually going out and getting a water softener and doing all that stuff when you're young and it's your first home. You know, you're doing what you can to get by, and that's what I was doing. So doing something like that and flushing out that water heater once a year is a great thing to do to help control that.
Yeah, I put my finger in there, and it was like white, and it was real. It wasn't hard or anything, and I figured out it was probably shaving cream.
Oh.
Huh. Because the only thing I ever did in that sink was shave and brush my teeth, and all that white stuff, and it I was just shocked, but it actually created a barrier, but it did. I felt it back up, and I thought it was going to start coming back through the sink, and then all of a sudden I heard it. It just cleared and went on right on through.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, Randy. Let's jump to Steve real fast. Maybe we can get something going for next week. Steve, I got about 1 minute. What's your question?
Okay, I had a new faucet and everything replaced in the wand, you know, the squirter thing.
Uh-huh. But
the squirter thing, if I squeeze the trigger, it stays on. I got to beat it on the faucet to make the dang thing shut off. And they say there's like a diverter. But I replaced the wand, and it does it again. And, you know, I don't know what I need to do to get that trigger to release or whatever.
Oh, yeah. So when you push the trigger to make the spray come out, it won't shut itself off when you let
the
button go.
Right, you know, nine times out of ten it does, or, you know, five times out of ten. But, you know, I called them, and they said the faucet and everything is, you know, lifetime, but I guess that wand thing is not. You know?
I would check your water pressure also, because if you have too much water pressure, that could be kind of holding that on there and keeping that running. And maybe your water pressure is at 70 or 80 and you need to bring it down to 50 or 60. But hey, we're totally out of time. Appreciate the call, Steve. Appreciate all the calls, the great conversations today.
Thank you very much.
And I'll look forward to talking to everybody next week.